It is the little things. Yes, it is the little things. This is Dr. Harrell Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Instant Illumination. It is the little things in life that really are the big things, that really are the foundation upon which all exists. And the little things, thoughts. The little things are thoughts. How do we work with the thoughts that come in our mind? How do we handle them? We're doing a project on campus right now, and the project is to find out how well you can go into introspection. And this is not an easy task, because our mind wants to give us a zillion, jillion thoughts that want to keep racing through our consciousness and coming to our attention and saying, listen to me, listen to me, listen to me, like a bunch of little children who say, mommy, mommy, mommy. And mommy just has to do what she has to do. And mommy can understand when there's a cry that goes, I'm hurt, mommy. And then she stops and listens and takes care of what has to be done and then goes back to her activity. However, when she hears all the caterwauling and all of the hollering and all of the talk that doesn't mean a thing, she knows. She's been there, done that, been around the block. She understands all those things, and so she does not let it disturb her. She trains her mind to sort of not cut them out, but to be alert to when a call comes that is necessary to be acted upon immediately. When you have a household full of little children who are doing all sorts of interesting things, many times they can be quiet. And then the mother says, uh-oh, time I look in and see what's going on. And when she looks in, she finds there's mischief afoot. Not that the children are trying to be mad or mean, it's just that they're being creative in a way that might be harmful to them. And so the mother gives them the proper attitude to work with, and lovingly suggests another way of doing something that isn't going to hurt them, and puts them on their way. She doesn't say, now you have done bad, you're evil, you go in your corner, you do this. And then when that happens, the rebellion starts. And when the rebellion starts, then you really have problems. Then you really have to be aware of the mischief that purposefully is going to be done or is being done. This is true of our consciousness too. When we listen to the thoughts that come through our mind, we don't pay any attention to them. In fact, if we paid attention to all the thoughts that went through our mind and were able to catalyze them and categorize them and be aware of them, we would be amazing people indeed. But we are not yet expressing ourselves on that genius level. We can, but we're not doing it at the moment. We're expressing ourselves on the level of what is the thought that is prominent, primary, and dominant and necessary for me to think, to put an idea into motion for myself. So, it's the little things, just a little thought. The little thought comes into our mind, I would like to be aware of my spiritual beingness. I would like to walk my spiritual path in a more significant, meaningful way. I would like to listen to the divine in me and hear what the divine has to say as to how I could be a more fulfilled being. Now, we listen to the outer world. You can be a fulfilled being if you own a house in this neighborhood, if you have a beautiful car, if you have these clothing, if you buy this designer designs, if you buy these certain things, and if you have these certain things, and then we pursue them, we look for them, and we find that that too is not the answer, because it only says, now is the time to buy something new, now is the time to go on and increase your closet. Now, your closet isn't big enough to hold all your clothing, so you're going to have to buy a new house with a bigger closet, with a walk-in closet. And pretty soon you're going to have a couple of walk-in closets. And the richer you get, the more you think you have to have. And how foolish that is. For the richer the person is, really, he lives very modestly and very wonderfully. We always go back to our Bill Gates. Bill Gates was a casual dresser. I don't know how much clothing he has in his closet, but he certainly doesn't demonstrate much of it. He has just several suits that he likes, and maybe a sweater and shirts and things that he likes, and he's not a clothes horse. And perhaps that's a point, too. But what he is, he has what he wants, and he wears what he wants, and being the richest man in the world, he can do pretty much what he wants to do, and he's a style setter by the very fact of what he does. And so we all can learn a lesson there. Bill Gates is no great shakes of knowing what is to be bought from the finest haberdasher, the finest tailor, the finest person who makes clothing. That's not his thing. But yet people go by what he does. If Michael Jordan wears certain tennis shoes, then those tennis shoes become famous. If he wears a certain type of gym clothing, those gym clothing items become famous. And people want to buy them because that's what Michael Jordan wears, you see. This is the strange thing about our world. Our world is not based upon our own inner self, our own inner reality, the thing that turns us on. It's turned based on the symbols of the outside world. And the outside world is based on commercialism, basically. So, as I say, the girls and the monks here are working on the idea of being aware of their introspective self and listening to the introspective self. And in the process, so many little things keep coming into their mind, keep demanding attention, keep saying, listen to me, listen to me. Like the children who are at their mother's side always say, mommy, mommy. And mommy doesn't listen. She only listens when it's important. And she can tell that very readily. She doesn't have to have her ears tuned to it. Again, a mother can be sound asleep, and when her baby cries in the middle of the night, that mother is alert, awake, and out of bed, taking care of that child as fast as she can, because she recognizes that particular call, that particular need, says, I need you now. You see, our introspective self is much of that same nature. We have many of the outer things that are calling for our attention and wanting to take our thought away. They're just little thoughts, a little thought here, a little thought there. A thought that might say, let's see, I'm going to write an article. What am I going to say? I'm going to call my mom. I'm going to discuss this with her. I'm going to listen to this man. He is calling in for treatment, and he calls in for treatment, and every time he calls in for treatment, it's basically the same thing. When is he going to learn? Well, you see, we have these thoughts that go through our mind, and then the thought goes through our mind. That's not for us to judge. Ours is to judge that it is done now. It is done now. And so that thought comes into our mind. We have so many thoughts, but they're all little thoughts, and they all demand our attention. And we have to be like the diligent parent who is able to interpret, who is able to select those things that to them are important. It's the little things. It's the little things. Life is just made up of an infinite number of little things. And so I say to people, if you want the little things to be taken care of, first you take care of yourself. You say, I like me. Therefore, you cannot think thoughts that are not harmonious with you. You say, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Well, when you live in your ideal spirit, mind, and body, then every thought that you think is a thought supportive of your ideal spirit, mind, and body. And you might make other affirmations, although those two are certainly adequate to cover anything that we might want to cover. But when we like ourselves, then we think thoughts that are about ourselves that we like. When we like ourselves, we speak words that will reflect our liking ourselves. When we like ourselves, we do things that show that we like ourselves. We do not go running races. We do not go overextending the body, overextending the abilities that we have. But hey, that's fun. Well, that's fine. But we do not do that. Why is it that you come a time in life when you can no longer do those things? Why is that? Well, that time really should have come early. Yes, go and enjoy these things, go and enjoy them, but when you make a fetish of them, when that is your total life, then what values are you getting out of life? Because you're going to have so many moments when your muscles hurt. You're going to have so many moments when you have tension headaches. You're going to have so many moments when you have all of these things that are going to drag you down. And they drag you down because that's not your reality. Your reality is not your physical body and all the possibilities that it can do and all the magnificence that it is and all of the fun that it is that we participate in our physical body. Our reality is our mental body. What do we do in our mind? What do we think in our mind? What do we dream in our mind? Follow your wildest dream, because that's the thing that is your reality. That's the thing that is the greatest fun and the greatest delight for you in every area of your life. The little things. It's just a little thing. It's a little thing to think a beautiful thought. Well, you look at your garden, and your garden is in terrible shape. The weeds are coming in, and it needs watering, and it needs to be taken care of and dug up and replanted and so forth, and you say, oh, what a job. And instead of saying, oh, what a job, you look at the garden and you say, I know exactly what I want to do. And so you get out your fork and your shovel and so forth, and you dig. And you dig your garden, whether it's a quarter acre, a half acre, a full acre, it makes no difference. You are timeless, and you dig. You dig slowly. Maybe you have a neighbor child come over and do some digging for you. But in any event, you teach that person how you want it dug. And you dig with them for a while, letting them see the gentle tenderness that you put in the soil and how you break up the soil with the tongs or the fork, and you sort of plop it down, and you make sure that it's all going to be tender and ready for the seeds, not that you have to do a number of other operations. You gently go through it. You keep your mind one-pointed. You see in your mind's eye the lovely garden you're creating. You see in your mind's eye the lovely garden you are creating. It is already done in your mind's eye. It's just a little thing, but it's a very important thing. And then you completely dig up the entire parcel before you do anything. Then you rake it down until it's in the proper levelness and the proper attitude for what you want. Maybe you've got a little hill here or there and adds a little accentuation to it of some charm, and you put a few boulders here and there to add a little bit of joy to it. And then you put a garden path through it. You put a path of some stones so that you can walk, whether it's rainy or whether it's wet or whatever, and you don't have to walk through the mud. And you make this first, your lovely design. And then, after you do that, then you start planting your plants. You might have your vegetable garden that is in one area of the garden, and you plant it lovingly in rows, and you name the rows so that you're aware of what you put in there and what's going to come up. And then in other areas, making a beautiful design in your quarter acre, half acre, or full acre, or whatever you're doing, and you plant it so beautifully, one-pointedly, and you see the flowers, you see the seeds bursting into flowers, you see the flowers coming up, you see all of it coming into fruition. Now, this is not so difficult. I think you're sort of following me along here, and as you follow along, you see that garden. And now the iris are here along the edges, and the peonies and the poppies and the poinsettias and the flowers of infinite variety are growing there, so that you will have flowers as long as possible for your table and for just to look at in your own garden. And around the edges you plant the berry bushes and a few rose bushes, and you make the garden into a masterpiece for yourself. And you say, that's going to cost a lot of money. No, it's not going to cost a lot of money. It costs a lot of attention, because you want every seed that you put in the ground to be at the proper depth into the ground. You want it to be the proper way. You do everything with so much love. The seed will grow 1 inch, half inch, 2 inches down. It doesn't really matter. It may take a little longer the deeper it is. But the thing is, you follow a program that you've established for yourself. You keep your mind one-pointed on that. Now, as you keep your mind one-pointed on it, your garden will burst forth in all its glory, and you'll have your wonderful little meditation path through your garden, a short one to be sure, but you'll have your little meditation path, and you'll have a bench maybe in the middle of your garden. So while your flowers are growing, while your vegetables are bursting forth out of their buds, you can sit there and listen to nature flowing and working about you, expressing the beauty that you have drawn up as the archetypal form for it in your garden. Yes, these are little thoughts, these are little things, and if you are scatterbrained and you plant your garden, if you are doing one little bit here and one little bit there and one little bit everywhere, and you have no design, you have no master plan, you may end up with a good garden, you may end up with something unique and something quite charming, but rather have a design ahead of time. Rather think, what do I want? What do I want to express here in my garden? How do I want to express it? And then the divine design in you carries out. And you'll find that the work you have to do is far less than if you're always trying to figure out what to do over here, how to do it over there. Have your major plan in your heart. So it is with introspection. As we're looking into our heart, as we're looking into the divine in us, what are we looking for? What do we want to get out of introspection? Do we want to have our attention drawn to every thought under the sun that passes through our consciousness? Or are we going to keep our thoughts one pointed on our garden? And what is this garden of our mind? What is it we want to plant? Well, let's just say I want to plant, I like me thoughts. Hey, that's a good idea. I like me thoughts. And I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. My goodness, just those two thoughts alone would be well worth all the attention I could give. Now, let's prepare the garden. Let's spade up the soil and turn it over and make it beautiful. Let's make sure we have the fertilizer that's necessary in there. Let's make sure we have the moisture that's going to help it to grow in our consciousness. Now, what is the fertilizer? The fertilizer are other good thoughts that say, yes, yes, yes. And the moisture is the love of our heart flowing into our thought. And what is the thought itself? I like me, I like me, I like me. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. My body is a temple of the living spirit. I am beautiful, I am good, I am wonderful. Just keep this pattern of beautiful thoughts and watch how they manifest in your life and in your world and how they make your dreams come true and how your introspection for the first time in your life becomes a directed introspection where you are listening only to the divine in you, and the divine in you has a pattern on which you have established where it is. The divine in you will talk about dumb stuff or good stuff. The divine in you is not judging. It is not determining. You set the course in motion. You say, I'm going to drive from here to the next city. And so then you get in your car, and your car, which is your divine right order, it takes you to where you want to go. And if you say, oh, I've had trouble with this car, the brakes don't work too well, and the shifting is in need of repair, and one tire is low, and so on. And as you do that, you create those things as problems for you on your journey. But when you surround your car with your pure white light of love, and all its ways are peace, and all its paths are pleasantness, then your journey will be one of absolute bliss, absolute peace. We drive from the mountain into San Diego several times a month, and as we do, each time it becomes shorter. Because each time we visualize ourselves, where we are going, and what we are doing, oh, really? I didn't know we did that. Yes, that's what we do. And pretty soon, it's a natural thing. We're there before we get there because we were there mentally before we got there. These are little things, but these little things make our life into a dynamic, forceful, wonderful activity. And it's something that each of us can do and each of us does do. It's the little things. Our practitioners are very successful because they're one-pointed. Now, they want to be successful in their life because they're going to be one-pointed in their life. You, plant the garden of your heart. with the same dedication, with the same diligence, the same direction that you plant the garden by your home, representing your imagination, your dreams, and your love. It's a wonderful thing. It's the little things, oh, golly Moses. Yes, it's the little things, and we can handle them beautifully because we are a master of the big things, the little things, and everything. Have a wonderful day and a beautiful illumination. I love you. I love you. I love you.